It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. It's Thanksgiving week. We are in the holidays. Feels like fall, is fall, feels like Thanksgiving. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Here in the studio with me, Ryan Ely, of course, to take your calls and your questions. Jake Moss, to basically just be here to not yell and scream on a Sunday morning. And we're here to say hello, good morning, talk about the markets, the world. Here we are, S&P 500 down this week, but not an ominous down, down about a third of a percent. Market's still on a very, very close to what we would consider, well, all-time highs, record highs. But there's also another measure that's probably even more telling, and that is the policy uncertainty index, which is at a record high as well, or close to, just like markets. We're safe to say close to a record high as well. So uncertainty continues to be high as we're on this knife's edge when it comes to the stock market, the economy, policy around the world. Which way do we fall? Creates for a very interesting environment. But today I want to revisit something that we haven't done for a couple of years. And is I love going back into these historical studies because the market is so, there's so many variables to look at any given point in time. What does the political environment look like? What does the economy look like? What do valuations look like? Individual companies as a whole or as a sector? There's so much to look at. What's sentiment right now? But if we look back to history, we can focus in on just a couple of variables. Hey, what did markets do in this situation in the next 6 months, 10, call it next 6 months, 6 years, two decades, you name it. So investment success, we think about, hey, I've got to get in this market or out of this market. Is this the time to be getting out because things have gone so well and uncertainty so high? Intuitively, you think, well, maybe this is a good time to just step aside for a little bit. But investment success, we have to remember, is less about this perfect or perfection timing. I want to get in the market right now or get out. Get in the market, get out the market. It's less about perfection and perfectly timing the market, and it's more about participation in the market. So that the study today brought up to now we're almost in 2020. I want to look at some of the most important perspective you can look at when it comes to investing over time. And I know even though we did this a couple of years ago, as I ran through the numbers, I know that these are the things we forget. We forget the exact percentages after dips and drops and recoveries. Because there's so many of them. So today I want to talk about a market that's very close to a high, while uncertainty, economic, politically, market uncertainty is also at an all-time high or near an all-time high. There is no shortage of commentary that talks about how the end is near. So these are confusing times. I bet you've asked yourself the same question over the last year or maybe the last couple of years. The Dow has climbed through it at 22, then 23,000, then 24,000. Now it's hovering close to 28,000. And I'm guessing you've wondered something like following, hey, should I get out? Is it time? Is it time to run for the hills? And is the bull on its last leg? And the financial news is wonderful. I love it. I read it every day of my life. But the financial, something from this weekend, there's a bull, and this I believe was in Barron's. There's a bull that is the topic of the article is, hey, are we hitting a wall? Is the bull market over? There's a bull laying drunk, passed out on a couch. It's this wonderful illustration, very lifelike illustration. So they humanized the bull. It's a bull, but he's wearing like a suit and a tie. The tie is a wine glass tipped over, empty on the floor, spilled a little bit. Clearly, he's had a couple bottles of wine. His tie is undone. He's sprawled out, like kind of passed out on the couch. Clearly, the bull on his last leg. That's the thought or the provocation that we are faced with today. The bull, isn't the bull tired? Isn't it over? And there's a couple of reasons. You could, and by the way, we can always point to the just symphony of economic data, there's always going to be a chair or two that doesn't look good. It's not perfect or performing. But the prevailing theme here in this particular article is that, hey, well, look at the Federal Reserve GDP now. And this is actually from our own Federal Reserve in Atlanta. So if you're tuning in from Pennsylvania or the Northeast or Central, the Midwest, or even the West Coast, our Federal Reserve right here in the Southeast, District 6, the Federal Reserve, the Atlanta Federal Reserve, it produces something called GDP Now, and they update it very frequently, and it's supposed to be a forecast of what gross domestic product, again, big deal, a lot of data points come together to forecast what growth will be like in America over the next year. Today, Fed GDP Now is down to 0.4%. So not even a 1% growth number, a measure of, hey, we're just, according to the Atlanta Federal Reserve GDP Now forecast, 0.4% growth? That's no good. Leading indicators. Again, another group of data set where you put about a dozen different leading economic indicators. So think of we want a forward-looking indicator. So that might be the number of manufacturing orders. Hey, we just ordered this. So the numbers haven't really even hit the economic data rolls, if you will. A backwards economic data number, it doesn't necessarily tell you a whole lot from a forecasting perspective, is actually GDP. Hey, what did GDP do last quarter? Well, by the time we get the number, it's old news, and then the news was from 3 months prior to that, all culminating. So you can't really forecast around a GDP number. You can forecast around things like pre-orders in a particular sector. So you put together about a dozen forward-looking economic data points and you get leading indicators, LEI. We want that to be positive. That right now is down to 0.3, so just above the flat line, slowest since 2016. The good news is it's still not negative. Still not negative, but again, it's about as slow as a pace as we can see. And then job openings. Look at job openings. 5% lower on a year-over-year basis. So there's less demand to hire workers or less openings here in the United States than were a year ago by about 5%. Put it all together and you see, well, the Fed says things are slowing down, or at least the Atlanta Fed, year-over-year growth, Conference Board of Leading Indicators only at 0.3. Job growth or job openings are slowing. Is this the end? Is this the end of the economic run, which means it's the end of the bull market run? The bull is sprawled out, passed out, necktie undone, on the couch. And that's the question that you and I have to always ask ourselves as investors. Should I get out now? Has it been a pretty phenomenal run for stocks? Is that enough? Or maybe you look at the cash, and this is the opposite scenario, same problem. You look at the cash you have not invested, and you say, well, man, I'm missing out. This market has done really well. And then it could keep going for another 10% or another 15% or another 20%. Maybe I should get this money in now. Time to get that cash into the stock market. Maybe I should have put the money into stocks. But now the market's too high and maybe it's just too late and I've missed the boat. Or Wes, should I, what do I do? Just the last week or so, we had a caller here on Money Matters. Same thing. Hey, I'm waiting. I think I'm waiting for a correction. I'm thinking of just selling. Is that what I should do? Another article this week. I've heard billionaires have 25% in cash. Shouldn't I have 25% in cash? Shouldn't I wait for a pull down? And all of this leads back to the ultimate conundrum when it comes to investing, and that's timing. Too early, too late. In any given day, somebody's going to ask me, should I get in to this market? Should I put more in? Should we be more into stocks, higher percentages? Or should I be getting out of stocks? And that's what I can just tell you, the climate. When I get the opposite question asked in a given day or a week, investors are to somewhat handcuffed as where to go, deer in headlights. And it is natural. It is totally, totally natural. Human emotion, no one wants to have bad timing. So the market, despite all the uncertainty, as we measure by policyuncertainty.com, and just we look around, we say this is an uncertain environment, it's still within this striking distance of a all-time high. So investors, we think we have to have good timing in order to make money. And first of all, the answer to that is, do you have to have perfect timing? Well, the answer I would say, yes, if you do happen to have perfect timing, you will nail it. Of course, you will own this market and you will be an investing genius if you could do it that way. Here's a newsflash, though. Investing success is less about perfection and more about participation, period. The reality, too, is that nobody can have this perfect timing. You can get really good timing. And this is the other thing that tricks us into doing. We can actually time the market once, maybe twice, maybe three times, and think, wow, this was actually pretty easy. Hey, it made sense to get out here, and then it made sense to get back in, and then it made sense. And then all of a sudden, you look back at your track record, maybe that was over a year or two even, you say, wow, I timed this thing pretty well. The problem is you can't keep doing that with perfection. No one can do it. Not even these super algorithmic, not even Watson can do it. You know, the supercomputer can be right and right and right and right, and then all of a sudden wrong one time, and it messes up your returns relative to not trying to time the market. And that's the newsflash here, is that no matter how good we are at it, we're never going to be perfect at it forever. So we have to just right out of the gate just understand that we're not going to be able to time it. So today's the metrics and the data we'll go through today, so one of my favorite ways to look at this, we're going to compare having the absolute worst possible timing you could have, nailing the perfectly wrong time, meaning buying at the ultimate market high, which you don't want to do, relative to nailing the bottom and saying perfectly entry time, here's the trough, and then compare those two numbers. And then compare that, both of them, relative to just sitting around in cash. What's the difference between perfect timing, the absolute worst timing, than just sitting money in cash? That's the data we'll go over today. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Your calls and questions, 404-872-0750. We're live here this Sunday morning, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We'll go to the phones. John in Buford. John, what's going on? How can I help, man? Whoa.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, man. Turn down your radio, please. There we go. I can hear you now. What's going on?
FIA, fixed indexed annuity, is part of a retirement portfolio. Retired. Depending on income now, as opposed to having employment income, right?
Got it.
And taking a portion of the assets and trying to protect downside risk and generate income at the same time. What are your thoughts on FIAs?
So fixed income annuity here's what I do like about this. I like the thought of having a percentage of the big picture. So if we look at your investments as a big pie, it's Thanksgiving. I'm reminded of pies. You want, let's call it 30% of the pie, up to maybe 50% for someone like you retired, and maybe 60% if you're really nervous about markets, but let's call it 30 to 50% that's in safety. I really like the safety net part of your thought process. Hey, I don't want to have everything in stocks. How old are you, John?
67.
67. Got it. So you don't want to have everything in the market. I get that. And I think that any family's got to have some sort of cushion or stable force when it comes to the bigger picture. So that's number one. So I like where your head is. The reason you would look at an investment like this, and actually fixed income annuities are more insurance products. They're technically not investments, but anything you put your money into, you could say you invested in. But let's just say that, so one, I like that there's a safety net. Two, what I don't love about what you called FIAs or fixed index annuities is the approach to safety. Because if you think about doing that, I'd rather more diversification, more variety when I'm looking at safety, okay? Buying a fixed index annuity, even though they're pitched as, hey, it's this, you can't, quote, can't lose, it's like buying one illiquid bond. So I would never just buy, if I'm going to have, let's say I have $1 million and I'm going to do a 30% of my portfolio in bonds, that'd be $300,000. I would never buy one bond for $300,000 that I'm also not even allowed to sell. And that's kind of the equivalent of what a fixed index annuity is. Now, there's a little more to this conversation. I'm going to ask you to wait. If you can't hold, I get it. I'm going to continue the conversation and answer your full question. But John from Buford on indexed annuities, hang on, my friend. You're listening to Money Matters right here at 95.5 WSB. More straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. It's Sunday morning, 95.5 WSB. We're back to John in Buford. So, John, are you still with us, my friend? We're going to the phones, 404-872-0750. And the question really was about, hey, you have about 40% of your assets in a fixed index annuity. Or hold on. You are thinking about doing that, or you already did that?
Thinking about doing it.
And I would ask you, and this might be rhetorical, but just tell me the impetus of that decision. What were your thoughts about why you wanted to do it?
With the markets being as high as they are, regardless of when some type of a correction, minor or medium or whatever, takes place, preserve some of that income from the downside risk in addition to generating a monthly income flow.
All right. So super logical. Now, the only thought, let me read into that just for a second. Typically, if you're going to get, if there's going to be some sort of safety, or let's call it cash, there's two ways to look at it. One, it's just a stable force and it stays. The other way to look at this, and this is the article I brought up earlier today, billionaires keeping 25% of their money in cash because they're waiting for a correction so that they can go in and scoop things at a discount. Let's put that aside, because we're talking about you and your retirement, and this is, I think, your thought to put 40% in something that's safe, that doesn't go down when the stock market goes down. I think that's the angle you're looking at here, and I think it makes a lot of sense, all right? But what I also said before break is that, so even though I like that thought of let's get some safety as part of the equation, what I don't love about fixed index annuities, that approach to doing that, or that approach to safety, is that the reality here is that you're buying, or the product that is a fixed index annuity is very much like buying a one illiquid bond from one company, which I wouldn't want to do. What I would rather see you do, or investors, and this is, again, hey, listen, John, this is just my opinion. There's a million ways to do this, but this is how I do it, is to look at a diversified mix of bonds. You can call it fixed income, but I just say, let's think about it as bonds. The baseline today in the world that we live in, the 10-year treasury bond pays about 1.75%. So call it 1.75%. Not a lot, but that's what the U.S. government is, quote, guaranteeing us for the next 10 years. A 20-year is a two and change. A 30-year bond is 2. Now, what's interesting is that a 1-year bond today from the Treasury is over 1.5%. So you don't have to go out 10 years to get safety and a little bit of rate of return, a 1.5% rate of return. And you don't have to buy a long-term bond to do this. Now, that's also the baseline. There's also a whole massive market of corporate fixed income, corporate bonds, that are paying higher interest than government treasuries, that with default rates of way less than 1%. So corporate bonds, particularly higher quality corporate bonds, that you can get, call it 2, 2.25, 2.5, 3%, and still maintain a very high level of quality. We can then also look at tax-free options and go into the municipal space. Municipal bonds, call it from the state of Georgia or a variety of states around the country that issue municipal debt backed by the municipality, backed by tax revenue, backed by, let's call it, water sewer revenue, that there's a high degree of safety to that. And we can get now a diversified way of adding safety to our portfolio. So for me, I'm a big believer in using fixed income or bonds to do that. The other thought is that if, let's say, the market does go down and we want to actually get back into stocks, bonds, for the most part, are highly liquid relative to buying some sort of annuity product. Now, an individual and one individual, a particular municipal bond, you can make the argument, hey, that might be not very, it might not be as liquid or get priced as much as we'd like to see it. But if you have a whole variety of fixed income or bonds or even bond ETFs, then you have daily liquidity. The minute you want to get out or sell, there's a market for that. And that would be, to me, the balance I would be trading for, looking at, rather than buying a fixed index annuity product that comes from one insurance company that has tons of illiquidity. And I get it. So John from Buford, my friend, thank you for your call. Let's keep going to the phones here. Rick in Douglasville. Rick, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Well, you started out talking about timing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get your view on the seasonal timing strategy.
Seasonal timing. Got it. Now, just a little bit of background on you. Are you working? Are you retired?
I am kind of hobby working as a contractor, and I am retired also from the FAA.
Oh, got it. So do you contract back to the FAA, I guess?
Yeah, they have contract towers.
Oh, wait. So tower, are you air traffic control?
Yes.
Ooh, that's cool. That is cool. It seems like, you know, I don't really know any air traffic control people, but the only time you get a window into that world, it is usually in a movie, and it's usually associated with a breakdown. It's like, this guy's in air traffic control and he can't handle it, and he basically loses it because it seems like the most high pressure job of all time. So
well,
I get
the problem. These people make a lot of money. And the only reason you haven't got a bunch of them as clients is because they also think they can do everything on their own.
Well, it is a very smart group, right? So typically, are you guys engineers that end up in air traffic control? Are you pilots? Or how do you end up in air traffic control?
We're mostly farmers.
That makes complete sense.
No,
okay.
we have no skill set other than air traffic control usually. Now, I'm old school, so that's the way it used to be. Right now they have college degrees, and you know, they are, you're right, they are smart.
So smart engineers that say, hey, look, I'm going to manage my money. And here's the other thing. I think the more mathematical you are, let's say, or the more, let's say, mathematically wired your brain is, the more you think of things in patterns and algorithms and formulas, and it makes all the sense in the world. You calling me as an air traffic control guy to say, hey, I've got a seasonal pattern or a seasonal trend following strategy that could make a lot of sense. And here's the other thing is that there's a lot of data behind seasonal patterns that show that seasonal patterns actually do have an awful lot of weight in markets. Now, the problem with any sort of seasonal pattern, and there's the sell in May, go away, because you get most of your market gains. You can get out of the market in the summer effectively. So you sell in May and then you get back into the market, call it towards the beginning of the year. And that's where we get a ton of our gains. That's the sell in May. But then there's also other seasonal trends. The interesting thought about this is that can work for 5 years and 10 years and 20 years. Then all of a sudden it doesn't work for 2 or 3 years in a row. And then you've left all this money on the table because the inverse ends up working. And that's the thing with any sort of seasonal trend is that it could have a beautiful track record. And then the next thing you know, it doesn't work once or twice. And then you would have been better off not having used the seasonal pattern to begin with. And that's what's so frustrating about trend following is that even when they work and they work and they work, it only takes one or two times or cycles where they don't work, and then you end up further behind. So, and I think it leads into, Rick, from Douglasville. I want to maybe let me go into some data here. So I think your call actually dovetails nicely into this economic data that I have from Schwab. So listen, keep us safe in the skies, Rick, and I'm going to put you on hold and go and really go through this data and answer your question for you, my friend.
All right, thank you. And the tech ops people like to listen to you too.
Well, I guess that today is a shout out to all the air traffic control, FAA. God bless you guys. Keep us safe in the skies, my friend. That's fun to talk to Rick in Douglasville. Here's the spoiler alert when it comes to this data. And this is, if you're just tuning into the show, what is an awesome way to look at historical rates of returns is to look at, compare having bad timing, getting out, or let's say getting into the market at the very worst time, right before a correction, and then, or getting in right at the very, very bottom or nadir and nailing the bottom and enjoying the full upside. So we can go back historically and look at that. Hindsight is perfect 2020 vision. So I can say, look, I know that if I go back to, let's call it 1990, and I'm going to go all the way back to 1990. I'm going to look at this and say, well, let's look at July 16th of 1990. That was the peak. The trough was October 11th of 1990. There was a decline of right at 20%, 19.9%. So I go all the way back to 19. Now this is, I'll go long run, intermediate term, and short run. Long run, year is 1990. It was a 4-month bear market, investing in the perfect time. So I nail the bottom till today, till the end of October 2019. My $10,000 grew to 188 grand. Just a massive rate of return. But if I had the worst timing and invested right before the market dipped 20%, I still today would have $152,000 rather than the 188, so perfect timing, I would have had more, but I still ended up with $152,000 with the worst possible timing. If I held cash during that same period of time, so this is from 1990 till today, if I held cash, my 10 grand would be worth 21,000. So the worst timing you could have possibly had, and if you've been invested this whole time, that still beats cash by 623%. I'm going to go to, I've got a lot of examples here, and I'll publish this on wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, underneath the money tab this week, because I actually have to write this for the web as well. But even if I go to the intermediate term and I look at during the 2000-2002 period, which was a really massive correction, down almost 50%, tech crash, 49% to be exact, getting into the market, so from 19 years ago, as of today, if I got in the market with the perfect timing, my $10,000 today would be worth $55,000, 10 to 55. If I had the worst possible timing and I put the money right at the very top before the crash, the $10,000 still today would be worth $29,000. Cash would have grown from 10 grand to 14.5. Here, investing in the absolute worst possible timing still beat cash by 100%, 100% better. Not that there wasn't, not that it wasn't a more harrowing ride, if you will, but still 100% better than leaving money in cash. I'm going to do some short-term examples when money matters return. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Little Travis Tritt in the background. A shout out to him here. He was in Atlanta last night. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. It's holiday season. This is exciting. I love that we're in the Thanksgiving / Christmas mode. And we are here, obviously, on Money Matters as well. So good morning. I really want to get back to this timing study that we just updated, the last just updated. And the whole premise here is to answer the question about timing. Do I get in the market because it's at a high, or do I get out of the market because it's a high? It's this timing question. It's the ultimate conundrum that we deal with as investors every day of our lives. And the study shows ultimately that it's not really about getting your timing right. It's about being invested for a long period of time that really matters. That's really what it's about. So understanding all of this data helps us focus in on what really matters in investing, which is participation, not perfection. In all the scenarios, certainly the long-term scenarios, I think that intuitively makes sense, we outlined today. Investing at the worst time still bested cash by a long, long, long shot. So the market history reminds us that the importance of time. And when I say time, I don't mean 100 years. I'm talking about 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Everyone listening, all of us, all of you, you have that much time. At least I hope that's the case. So another kind of a shorter run example, if you go back to the year 2000. So let's go all the way to the 07, 09, the intermediate run. Just like the tech crash, the Great Recession, down 56% for the S&P 500. We're talking about investing $10,000. If I did this at the perfect time, right at the bottom of the market, which would have been obviously March 9th of 2009, that 10 grand turned into 56,000. The worst possible timing, so investing in October 07 yielded growth of near all the way up to 25,000. Cash basically did almost nothing, but 10 turned into 10,600, where interest rates near zero during that span. So investing at the worst possible time, your worst timing still beats cash by 135%. The same happens on the short run. If you look at investing at the end of last year, 2018, you know, full 20% correction between September 21st and December 24th of last year. Perfect timing takes 10 to 13,000. Worst timing takes 10,000 to 10,600, which still beats cash. You can find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, at wesmoss.com. I'll write this study up early this week and I'll publish it at wesmoss.com. You can find us online there. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team, WESMOSS.com. Enjoy the rest of this wonderful Sunday. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.